Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Rabbit, did I tell you, by the way, that our...
What did you tell me?
Well, our furnace guy was trying to use his navigator to find our address.
Uh-huh.
No, I have it wrong. What he was trying to do was find a travel agent, and our address came up as a travel agency.
Well, there you go.
So we should be charging a fee.
We certainly should. But, yeah. but listeners, we have an interesting program for you today. It's called...
No theme.
Well, if you think the theme is beet juice, followed by...
Bouillon
cubes, followed by...
Murex.
Cake. Followed by...
And candy, too.
Followed by an interesting look at what comes out of the sea in the form of fish.
We can pull those all together.
We can. You think we can? We'll try. So anyway, first up, you have to like, in order to like beetology, you have to like beets.
I loved it.
But what's not to like about beets?
Well, some people don't, but I just thought it was get lots of juices, and I'm telling you, this is wonderful.
It
really registered with me.
So let's talk about it with the creator.
Some people love beets. Some people hate beets. I happen to be in the first category here, and so is Peter, and so is Kim Kassar, who we're going to be talking to about this wonderful juice product called Beetology. That's a great name, Kim.
Thanks so much. Yeah, we love our Beetology, and we love our beets.
Right. And now, what is Keiko?
Keiko is it's actually a family-owned company, and we've been in business for over 60 years. And we make a bunch of different products. We make a lot of kosher products, and we make a lot of natural, organic, and just good-for-you products. And Beetology is our latest brand launch, and we're really excited to bring it to market.
Right. Well, it tastes great. Tell us what that encompasses, the Beetology juices.
Sure. Well, we started with, I am a beet lover, as you mentioned, so we started with just an absolutely delicious beet that is all natural, organic, and just had that right sweetness. But from there, we actually layered the product with a little bit more flavor, and we have five different varieties. Our most popular variety right now is beet and cherry, and that product is layered with this beautiful tart cherry juice and a little bit of apple juice, and that's it. None of our products are from concentrate. There's no water added, no sugar added, so it's just all natural goodness. From there, we created a beet and veggie product, which, in my opinion, is absolutely one of the best. It only has five ingredients, and that one contains beet juice, apple juice, carrot juice, kale, and celery juice.
Yes.
So it really packs a punch of nutrition.
Yeah, and I like the lemon and ginger as well.
It's one of my favorites. It just is so simple. So the lemon and ginger contains just beet, apple, lemon, and ginger, and it just gives you that little punch of brightness from that ginger flavor in there. And again, just the natural sweetness of the product or the ingredients or what comes through. Nothing else. 100 calories per bottle, per 8-ounce bottle. So just a really delicious treat.
Now, you're targeting the current market, which is people who really want to do things more natural and with more health benefits.
Absolutely.
I mean, is that different from your other products, or are they all like that?
We are constantly trying to deliver products that offer better ingredients. We always say we hold ourselves to a very, very high standard. And the Beetology juice is in that same place. It's funny, just recently I was having a conversation with a good friend, and we're talking about, you know, I was talking about this beet juice, and he's like, you know what? I really made a life change. I really am looking for things that don't have artificial ingredients, that are organic. He said, I really care more now than ever about what goes into my body. And I said, well, you're absolutely going to love Beetology, because that's exactly why we made it. And it's not just for, you know, the folks that work out or runners. We have a whole group of runners that absolutely love the product. They talk to us all the time. But this is for the working mom who's running after a toddler who needs to replenish their energy, you know, during the long day or during a hot day. So the market is really demanding all natural, nutrient-dense products, and we think we've come up with a really great solution.
Now, give us an idea of the profile of beets from a nourishment standpoint. I mean, are they big in vitamin XYZ? Are they good for you because they have lots of potassium like bananas? I mean, what's the nutrient profile of a beet?
Well, you've got it. So they are packed with nutrients. They are a great source of fiber, a great source of vitamin BD, potassium, you named it, iron, and vitamin C. So it's just this wonderful combination of nutrients in a delicious little beet. And it does a lot for the body. You know, it's said that beets will help lower blood pressure, helps improve blood flow, increased exercise performance. It's great for endurance, and that's why a lot of these folks that are heavy into, you know, their workout and running absolutely love it. And of course, it's also very good for digestion with all that fiber in there. So really, there's nothing bad about these beets. It's a perfect way to drink your vegetables.
That's a clever way of putting it. Now, a beet is a vegetable. It's not like a tomato, which is a fruit. It really is a vegetable. But what's involved in preparing the beet to go into a beetology bottle? I mean, do you boil them up?
That is a great question.
I started out with beets, actually doing them on the grill, doing them on the barbecue grill, sprinkled with salt and pepper and coated with a little olive oil, and it was a great hit with the family, and it still is to this day. And then I realized I could make them inside as well just by boiling them for about the same length of time, but it does take a long time, and you don't want the skin to be burst, otherwise you'll lose some of the flavor. How do you go about it?
Absolutely. So that's a great question, and it's one of the main benefits of our product. So our beets, as well as all of the fruits and vegetables in the product, are actually cold pressed. So we press the juice right out of these beets to get all of those nutrients and all of those great ingredients without tampering with it. It's very, very minimally processed so that we get all of nature's goodness into the bottle.
Okay. And that doesn't wreck the fiber pressed in.
Exactly. Nope. It keeps that fiber intact.
I thought also that a direction you could go in with your beetology beets was to use them to create a Bloody Mary substitute.
He's always thinking something to drink.
Funny you should say that, because we believe the same thing here at Beetology. Uh-huh. And we've created a few different cocktails because, you know what, why not have something that's absolutely delicious and good for you along with, say, your vodka? So we've created a few different cocktails, which can be found on our Instagram account, which is My Beetology. And we've had some fun with making a beet zinger, and we actually did do a beet Bloody Mary. So do check it out. They're delicious.
No, I was thinking of either or both of Tabasco sauce and Leon Perrin's Worcestershire sauce. Just for those people who say this stuff is good, but it's a little bit sweet for my taste. And
sure.
You could really make it sing.
Yeah.
in a Bloody Mary with the other classic Bloody Mary ingredients.
See, you can tell he likes this product.
I love it. It's fantastic.
I absolutely love it. I couldn't figure out which one I liked best. I just couldn't do it. I tried again before I knew you were coming on the program so that I could contribute my thoughts for our listeners. But listeners, I can't figure it out.
No. Well, my favorite right now, I think, is probably the veggie, but it's true. It's hard to pick because they all have a great taste.
Now, here's a risky one for you.
Okay.
We read somewhere, this is a very long time ago, when Anne was expecting, and she was having those.
That's very long time ago. She was turning 40.
She was having those things where she would wake up in the night because she would lust after ice cream at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then she'd have some more. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, and we read somewhere about a lady, I think she was in England, but I'm not sure, who developed a craving for carrots.
Okay.
So she ate lots and lots of raw carrots, and she was as healthy as all get out. The unfortunate thing was that her skin turned carrot.
It turned a little orange.
Orange, yes.
Now, is there any risk? Is there any risk of that with Beetology?
How do I answer this appropriately? So no, you will not turn the color of a beet. So we don't suffer the same fate of carrots. But sometimes you notice some changes, in other things.
Yeah, I know.
I got
you have to be careful, yes.
I got it, yes.
Now, do you use only red beets? I mean, are you doing anything? Because the salads nowadays are, different kinds of beets, and including yellow golden beets.
Yeah, so right now our beets in Beetology, we're just using the beautiful red beets, but I have been looking at and working with our R&D team to try to develop something with some new types of beets. So keep an eye out. Hopefully our innovation pipeline will have some new and interesting colors as we go forward.
Yeah, well, you really introduced my next question is, where do you go with this product? I mean, do you just keep expanding the flavor options, or what else do you do with it?
That's a great question, and we're still learning because we've only launched this product a few months ago. One of the things I will say that we learned rather quickly is that kids absolutely love Beetology. And it's not geared towards children. You know, this is you know, not an adult beverage per se, but you know, it's packed with nutrients, and we just didn't think that beets would be so popular among kids.
Yeah.
But they love the taste. So we're thinking in the future there could be an option for a product that's more directly geared towards children. It's something we're keeping our minds open to. I'll tell you, when my daughter drinks, and she likes Beetology, she's 6 years old, and when she drinks Beetology, I am the happiest mother on the planet because it is the only time a vegetable gets into that child's mouth, and
oh,
so
no.
It makes me so yes. I call her a carbivore because all she eats is carbohydrates. So I'm hopeful that she'll continue to drink her Beetology because I know that she's getting all that good stuff. But we do think there's an opportunity for that maybe in the future.
I have another thought for you. This is really crazy thought. But let's suppose that you could find a cocktail wizard, a mixologist, or whatever they call them these days, who could make a cocktail that had layers of different colored beet juice and even a clear layer of either vodka or gin.
Oh, my God.
I mean, wouldn't that
sounds a little like a Jell-O shot, but I'm not entirely sure.
Well, I guess it is similar to that.
Well, that would be amazing. I'm going to be on the hunt to find that a mixologist that can make that happen.
I'm sure you can.
That would be gorgeous.
Well, I can't tell you I can't tell you more about how much we like the product, and I can't wish you more success than we already have, pretty much. But I just think it's wonderful, and I expect it's doing very well on the market.
Well, first, thank you so much. And yeah, the interest in the product has really just absolutely taken off. It's growing in leaps and bounds. And our biggest complaint right now from consumers is, I can't find it at a store near me. So we're working hard on rolling it out across the country.
But that was my final question is, how do you get hold of this?
Well, the best way right now is we are available in a lot of local natural product stores. That's where we started our launch strategy. We went to the place where we know consumers are looking for good, wholesome, organic products. But if you can't find it in your local store, come visit us on Facebook at My Beetology. We have a store locator where you can put in your zip code and find a store near you.
Okay, you don't sell, you don't retail it on your website.
E-commerce, we don't do it yet. We are working on it, and we hope to be online selling it within the next few months.
Oh, well, good. Okay, I'm glad I asked that question.
And don't forget your promise.
Which promise was that?
You said you'd send me some more.
Oh, you got it. No problem.
I thought you meant that she'd develop that cocktail with the
layer. That's what I thought.
Well, we'll do that too.
The cocktail might take a little longer.
Yeah.
Well, we have a couple of friends here who are behind the bar specialists. So we'll task them, and if they're successful, we'll pass the results along to you.
Well, wonderful. I look forward to sampling it.
And Kim, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, Kim.
Oh, thank you so much.
Kim Kassar, and she's representing Beetology Juices of the Keiko Company. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you, Kim. And listeners, don't go away, because we'll be right back following a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
I like the address for the email for this next company. It's, the company is called Boo, which, by the way, is the name of my first most beloved cat. But it means a dear one, you know, but my Boo was spelled with two O's. This one is O-U as in bouillon, I guess, but the slogan here is in the Boo for You address, the email address. Boo for You. I love that.
Yeah, whoever knew that someone would reinvent OXO cubes? But a nice young man has, and this is good stuff.
It is good. You like it
very,
a lot.
Very, very, very useful, very easy to use, all of the above. But the fascinating thing, I think, is why and how this young man came up with the idea in the first place.
I just learned something new in culinary history today from our next guest, Robert Jacoby. And we got this bouillon cube product, very nicely packaged, I might add, in the mail. And Peter, who, of course, grew up in the UK, said, "Isn't that odd? I have never seen these bouillon cubes in the U.S. before. I grew up with them." And I said, "Well, you know, funny, I grew up with them too." And then at some point, they sort of disappeared, replaced by either dried soup or, actually more accurately, replaced by canned broth. So, Robert, you explain to me exactly what happened and why you're making this product, what you're looking for by way of marketplace, and you filled me in on the history of it. Tell us about it.
Sure. So the U.S. has a very small bouillon category of a few hundred million dollars, but the market is dominated by one big brand, Knorr, which is owned by Unilever, very recognizable on the shelf in the yellow and orange packaging. We decided to come in with a better-for-you alternative, and the market really hasn't seen any disruption in the category for decades. It's become a very stale category. Bouillon cubes are seen as very unhealthy with a lot of sodium inside and MSG and other types of things. And I realized that there was an opportunity to disrupt the category with this better-for-you alternative. And so we launched Boo. We launched Boo into the marketplace in May in New York. And we've received great feedback so far. But that is the reason why we launched it, is that there was one big player dominating the category. There hasn't been much growth in the category for a very long time, and we wanted to bring the younger millennial set who all cook back into the category, which at the moment is really not known by the young millennials, just because there hasn't been any innovation. So I hope that answers your question.
Well, now let's go a little bit further, because you're like me. You're a Brit or an Englishman,
however
you prefer to be called. Why you? Why are you doing this in these United States?
So I moved to the U.S. About a year and a half ago after selling my food company in the U.K. I decided to move to the U.S. for a couple of reasons, but one of the main ones was that I was at the time dating very seriously my girlfriend, who is now my wife, and she's from New York.
Always the same story.
Yeah, chez la femme. Guess who's married to a Yank?
There we go. Yes, so I think we have similar stories there, Peter.
Probably.
So that was the driving factor behind me coming to the U.S. Now, I studied here for college after going to school in London. So between the age of 18 and 22, I was in the U.S. And then I went back to London after graduating from college to work there. And I ended up in the food industry and built up a very successful food company called Metcalf's Food Company, which was the fastest growing privately owned food and drink company in the UK between 2011 and 2014. And we had two brands. One was the number one gourmet popcorn brand in the UK called Metcalf's Skinny. The other brand that we had was called Itsu, which was an Asian brand, very much like Pret, but Asian inspired. So we had a chain of 80 eat-in takeout locations, and we launched a brand in the supermarkets around noodle cups and things. Now, why I got into bouillon is that when I sold the business in January 2016, so over a year and a half ago, and moved back here, I was thinking about what I wanted to do next in the industry. And I had built a very close relationship with a family-owned manufacturer here in the U.S. that makes soups. And they approached me with the idea to launch into the marketplace a better-for-you bouillon cube. And they have proprietary technology that they have developed over the years that allows them to make a cube with much lower sodium in it, and it's effectively a much cleaner product. And this is a very difficult product to manufacture. And so the immediate interest for me was that here was a product which hadn't really been launched into grocery. It already existed, but in a much unhealthier way. And here was a manufacturer that was able to make a better-for-you product. And they were the only people in the U.S. that can do it. And I always said to myself, if I was going to go back into the food industry again after having been in a very competitive space in the U.K. with popcorn and other types of snacks, which were very easily copied, I always said to myself I wanted to launch something where there were high barriers to entry and where with a product which was difficult to replicate. So that had it, this bouillon tube. And on top of that, there was a real opportunity to disrupt the category with something which was better for you than kind of the market leader in Knorr. And there hadn't been any innovation, as I mentioned before. So those were the reasons for launching Boo. I put together a team whom have worked with me in the past with my other food business. And we launched, as I said, in New York in May. And we're very excited by the opportunity, not just here in the U.S., but in Europe and in the U.K. And overseas as we get bigger.
Now, one of the interesting things that you haven't mentioned, but which I think my mother used to appreciate when she bought OXO cubes back in the 1940s, is that the cubes are very much more compact than, for example, cans of soup or cans of chicken broth or cans of beef broth. Now, you haven't mentioned that as being a sale point, but it seems to me like that would be true as well.
Absolutely, it is. I mean, the cube format, it is easy for people, to use. You know exactly how much water to add to the cube so you can create the right amount of, you know, soup or soup concentrate or broth, however you want to use the cube. But yes, the cube format for us is a much easier product than, say, a paste or a powder. So, and the other thing I didn't add before, Peter, is that we have plans and aspirations to move outside of bouillon into other types of cubes and be really known as the better-for-you cube in the marketplace. So we're launching, in time for Thanksgiving, a gravy cube, which is going to look exactly like a bouillon cube, except it's a gravy cube. And that market, again, hasn't really had any disruption or innovation. It's dominated by Heinz, and there's no gravy cube at all in the marketplace. And we've also got plans to launch early next year an on-the-go soup cup, which will have one bouillon cube inside and then a healthy grain which would include quinoa and brown rice, and you then have an on-the-go lunch meal. And I've done this successfully in the UK previously with one of my brands, but again, that market, which is effectively the front-of-store convenience soups market, which is a $5 billion category, is dominated by big brands like Cup and Noodle. And again, those brands haven't innovated. They're unhealthy. The packaging isn't great. So we're very excited by kind of the entire soups category and what we can do here with effectively a better for you bouillon cube, whether it's bouillon or gravy or whatever, as the base. So
sounds like you have your finger on the pulse of this whole thing. I usually cover the Fancy Food Show every year in New York, and I devised a number of years ago the most expanding category was free from or free of, and that's because of the focus on health. And you can see it coming from 6 years ago.
So how's it been going so far? You've been going since May.
Going since May. Been going great. So we have been focused on the New York tri-state area in terms of launching the brand and seeding the brand. So I don't believe that you can build a brand nationally across the country, from day one. Our team is based in New York, so we've been focused in the New York tri-state area. We have listings now with UNFI and KeHE on the distribution side. We just very, very recently got confirmation that we will be going into Whole Foods nationally across the whole country.
That's a coup.
At the end of September, which was a big coup for us.
Yeah.
I've been building out the team. As I said, I've brought on board a number of people who've worked with me previously. We raised some outside capital before we launched in May from a number of strategic investors, and actually our lead investor is a company called Excel Foods that is kind of considered one of the leading VC funds in the food and beverage space. So, yeah, we're very excited by the opportunity here. We're also excited by the investors who've come in behind us and by the team we've assembled, and then obviously with the product range and the branding as well.
Yeah, but the branding is good. And if this deal with Amazon goes through, wow. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Right. I'd add also, in addition to listings with Whole Foods, right now we're on Fresh Direct, which is a very big online retailer in New York and kind of in that area. We're on Amazon now, and we're in a number of high-end retailers in New York, including Gourmet Garage. They're all being serviced through our distributor, UNFI and KeHE. So that's where we are as we stand. So hopefully that answers your question.
It sounds really wonderful. You sound like one cool dude.
Yeah, but Robert. By the way, one of the names that comes up a lot in retail distribution is a supermarket chain called Wegmans.
Yes.
And
Wegmans, we've been in discussions. And,
okay, good.
They've seen the product, and they like the product, and we are going to be launching Wegmans shortly too, but probably sometime early next year.
I mean, it's endless possibilities for you.
The only thing you have to do now is figure out how to make cranberry sauce that doesn't have the markings of the can on it. this is one of the biggest controversies around Thanksgiving, which you would have probably come across when you were here before, but maybe not. Some people think that you absolutely have to serve the cranberry sauce
out of the can
with the can marking still on it. that otherwise it's not cranberry sauce. Our son, amazingly enterprising young man that he is, actually makes his own from fresh cranberries. But I'm sure if you're making gravy and you're making bouillon cubes, You can certainly make cranberry sauce.
Yeah, can you tie in any way with these single serve machines?
Yes, we can. We can, and that is something that we're looking at to do in the future too. There's just as I'm sure you can imagine there are just so many opportunities here.
Yeah.
It's just a question of staying focused and structured and not trying to do too many things too quickly. But yes, that is definitely something that we're considering for the future.
I mean, that's very millennial. Yes.
Well, yeah. We wish you the very best.
We're so glad
we met you early in your career here in the United States. It sounds like you know exactly what you're doing,
and we're proud that we got in on this. So
yeah,
we're
in love with it. I'm making my famous pork chop and mushroom recipe
tonight,
and I decided I would vegetize it a little bit.
Okay, so vegetable variety.
Great. Well, listen, we'll send you more product.
Good man.
You know, please, reach out. You know, you have my email address.
I do.
So anytime you need samples, I'd be delighted to send them to you. We'll keep sending them to you. So I'm very happy that you both are fans of the brand and the product range. Okay, perfect. Thank you. Well, I appreciate your time, both of you. It's nice to speak to a fellow Brit. in New Peter. So thank you again for both of your interest, and I really appreciate your time and you including me on your show. Thank you.
Thank you. We love these innovative concepts and the idea of somebody jumping into a business and making a really successful go at it, such as the case with Ron Mancini and Jackie Baker, who just launched into this confectionery company. And you ate most of it.
Yeah, I did. The crunch, what was the crunch?
Butter crunch.
Butter crunch.
It was yummy.
It lasted about a week, and that was two containers of it.
And you ate most of it, I must say.
Yeah, I admit it. I was listening to...
But I liked it.
I was listening to Marie Antoinette. She said, let them eat butter crunch. So I did. Here's Ron, and his wife's name is... Ron... You have the piece of paper. What's this?
I didn't know what you were asking me about the guests.
It's Ron
and Jackie.
From Manchester, Vermont, no less.
Right. We've been having such a good time, I forgot we had to record a program. We're talking to Ron Mancini and Jackie Baker of Mother Merrick, which is, how do you describe your company, a confectionery company?
Yes, we are a confectionery. We are makers of artisanal chocolates and cakes.
Yeah.
And we're sweets on both ends, the baking end and the chocolate end.
Yeah. Now, how did you get such a huge product lineup here? I mean, your catalog is mind-boggling.
Well, it kind of... Well, in the beginning, we started out as a pop-up fudge stand in the middle of a store here in Manchester, Vermont, which is a wonderful destination resort community with almost a 200-year history of visitors coming and enjoying themselves in the Green Mountains. And so that's how the business started. And then the following year, folks that had a second home here owned an ice cream company and cajoled us into opening up an ice cream parlor along with our fudge. And at that time, I had just started making our butter crunch, which is that is now probably our most popular. Well, it is our most popular item that we make.
That went in a blink in this house.
Oh, that's great.
Well, we like to hear that,
I think you sent two big boxes and they didn't last a week.
That's awesome. So what happened was we started making in the soda fountain. We had an old-fashioned soda fountain. And besides making fudge and butter crunch and a couple of dipped chocolates, this was before we were making truffles and caramels, we started baking cookies and brownies at home and selling them on the soda fountain. And then the second biggest product that we make came into our lives in a rather serendipitous way. The woman who introduced Jackie and I, her aunt was driving up from Old Lyme, Connecticut, which is a good 3-hour drive up here to Manchester, Vermont, to celebrate her 80th birthday with Susan. And Susan invited Jackie and I, and we brought ice cream to Aunt Lou's little birthday party.
Uh-huh.
And Aunt Lou brought her own cake.
I sense a lemon pound cake sneaking in.
Right. And it's, and so we said, wow, Aunt Lou, this cake is delicious. And she gave us the recipe, and we started, and we named it Lemon Lulu after Aunt Lou. And she lived till 91, and the cake, 39 years later, is rocking along right alongside Buttercrunch as our most popular items, not only in our retail shop, but online and in our catalog, and become extremely popular, especially the Buttercrunch, with small to medium-sized companies throughout the country.
So it's like a Christmas gift box.
Exactly, it's our 1 pound gift box, and we have now have some of our corporate customers who have been buying from us for over 30 years, and many of them, most of them came to us through our retail store and ice cream parlor and bought a box of Buttercrunch and thought it was good enough, and since we're in a resort community, they went back home to their businesses in New York, New Jersey, Houston, Florida, and started ordering it for their clients.
And that made a huge difference
in our business.
Now, here's the funny thing. To me, it's a funny thing anyway. The pound cake is particularly flexible, and I wouldn't have thought of it that way, but it comes refrigerated in a cool box, and you can put it straight in the freezer and then keep it there for when you really need a dessert. And guess where? We have one there right now.
Oh, good.
That's great.
Well, you know, many people do that, and they want to be prepared for when company drops in or when they want to have a little special party, and they can just pop it right out of the freezer, and they are ready to go, and they don't have to make any dessert. And everybody thinks it's crazy good. And so we're just so pleased that that's the case.
Now, I'm trying to piece this together. I mean, 40 years is a long time. 40 years ago, it was not the thing to quit the day job and open a confectionery company.
We actually rode that gourmet wave, if you will, that started in the 80s. I'm sure you remember, you know, all of the interest in fine cooking and people starting to cook at home and really paying attention to the food. I mean, it certainly wasn't farm to table yet, but I really see that direction really starting at about that time, and it certainly provided a pathway for us to continue to grow and expand our product line and really become, you know, more known and really popular.
Now, what did you
brought food service experience. Her grandmother owned a famous pie restaurant back in the 60s. And like a family restaurant, but famous for her pies. And being in food service and coming from a professional teaching background where Jackie taught and actually taught in Australia for a year.
Oh, yeah. I lived in Australia.
In Toowoomba.
Toowoomba. We lived in Melbourne, and not outside of Melbourne,
in Geelong.
And we were just back in March.
So it was quite an interesting combination for Ron and I with our various skills, and we really made a good team. And it's lasted quite a long time, and we just celebrated our 37th anniversary, wedding anniversary. So we're very blessed and lucky.
Yeah. Now, I have this theory, of course, about names and careers. Now, if you're named Baker, what else are you going to do, right?
It's pretty crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, my goodness.
And if you're a Mancini, you like
bread.
You like desserts.
A Mancini bread is the big bread, local bread in Pittsburgh.
Mancini
Bakery, yeah.
Yeah, it's really horrible bread.
Well, I hope Lemon Lulu certainly
I'm sure,
addresses that.
I'm sure
we represent the Mancini family much better than perhaps their brother.
Good man.
Now, so we know about Jackie has sort of a family history of this cooking thing. Ron, what did you do before you did this?
Well, I actually I was in sales. I've been in sales most of my life, and in fact, my dad was leading salesman for Brooks Brothers flagship store in New York City.
Oh, wow.
And I was a stock boy on his sales floor, so I got to watch, learn from my the master what that was all about. And I was in pharmaceuticals for a few years and for a few years in insurance. And coming to Vermont was a pretty special thing for me to do in my life. And starting this with Jackie and going from there has been pretty, well, it's been very rewarding.
So, Jackie, did you sort of hang out in the kitchen baking brownies?
Well, actually, before we had any real thought about having a bakery aspect to the confectionery, I just loved to bake. So I would make chocolate chip cookies or brownies and then started the Lemon Lulu cake in the kitchen at home and bring them in to sell on the ice cream fountain.
Uh-huh.
And once we hired a wonderful professional chef, that was his, you know, purview. He was there to take care of that. And Ron had a wonderful invitation to Tom, who was our pastry chef when he first started. He said, Tom, as Ron pointed to the pastry case, this is your stage. So let's see what we can produce, can put out for the customer. And Tom was wonderful with an exquisite combination, taste and texture and flavor of products and putting those ingredients together to just have the best products out there. So it's been, yeah, he was with us for 14 years.
Uh-huh.
Had a master's in library science and decided to take a detour for 14 years and now back in library science and reference librarian.
That's what our son does that.
But while Tom was doing that, I was getting some really good mentoring from some wonderful chocolatiers, plus I was able to avail myself to a lot of the Calibo college courses and expanding my depth of knowledge in chocolates, and spent actually a month out in Issaquah, Washington at Bohm's Candies, which is very well known in the Northwest. And Bernard invited me to spend a month there working with him, and I brought those his passion and recipes and skills back, and it's made a difference in how we grew with the business.
You know, we do a lot of chocolatiers. It's a really interesting group. I mean, to find out what they all did before they got into making chocolate. You know, you had Askenosi was a high-profile criminal attorney, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And who was the one in the Chow is from South America, and he did something else, too. And there are just so many of them. Who is the one that only uses antique equipment? You know, they're really an interesting lot.
We are.
Yeah.
And actually, it's an interesting community. It's a fairly, it's a sharing community.
Uh-huh.
Like, I now, over the years, of course, we know so many others in the industry that if we're having a problem with something, be either equipment or formulation, there's somebody we can call or they can call us. And it's really pretty special to have that. And but what's ended up happening is with our toffee, our Butter Crunch, has become so popular that it is now driving almost all of the confections that we make. And even though the truffles and caramels are really wonderful, and I've learned from older candy makers how to make my caramel back in the 70s. Buttercrunch just is dominant. And I call Buttercrunch job security because we have one of our corporate customers who sends out several hundred boxes every Christmas time. And when his salespeople call on these companies, the first question they're asked is, are you going to send us those crunchy things again?
So you're not going to be able to retire anytime soon.
Yep, and we've partnered up with Cabot Butter you know, Cabot Club.
Oh, I love Cabot Creamery, yeah.
Well, we use Cabot butter exclusively.
Oh, it's good stuff.
And, in fact, it's Cabot, they've given us permission to use their Cabot butter image and actually say Cabot Creamery butter as one of our ingredients.
No, it's one of my favorite butters. Yeah. Now, just let's do this website so the people know where they can get these products.
Ah, okay. So we're at www.mothermyrix.com. That's MOTHERMYRICKS.com. And our website is very transactional. We have a lot of folks that just want to send gifts at the holidays to 5 or 6 or 7 people, and our website makes it really easy for them to do that.
And do you still have a shop?
We do.
Okay.
In fact, what ended up happening was we were back when we had we closed the ice cream parlor after having it for 27 years. The catalog and the future, the web was showing up as the driver, and so we now have a cake and chocolate showroom, if you will, our retail store in downtown Manchester.
And I manage that.
Oh, good.
And I run the production and the catalog and website.
Well, it sounds like a very efficient operation here.
Yeah, it worked out that way. There's only 12 of us in the company.
Oh, wow. Well, you sound like you're having a good time anyhow.
We are.
Good. Well, hopefully we'll get our party together.
Is there anything distinguishing about the Butter Crunch that made it a favorite of yours?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think the texture of it was just perfect. I mean, you know, you can get it where it's too hard, you can get it where it's too soft. Your texture is really perfect. No broken teeth in it.
Well, the other thing we also do a mixture of cashews and almonds together.
Oh, so maybe that's why it tastes better.
You know, and they complement it. So we roast them ourselves, we grind them ourselves, and the whole product is made by hand.
Well, anyhow, I think it's amazing, and I hope we get our party together and get together and meet all these other artisanal producers that we talk to in Vermont. It's a great place, and it's great meeting you, and thank you for talking to us.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Thank you, Anne.
Bye-bye, you too.
All right, Peter.
Bye.
See you now.
Bye. Take care. Thanks.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, everybody's really engaged with the sustainability, and thank God we could do something about it. And Matthew Dolan addressed
sustainability in this case of fish.
Yeah, this is
of wild fish.
I was just about to say that this is about selecting different types of fish from what we're using. Not everybody in the world can eat around the clock tuna and salmon.
Most of the rest of the world doesn't really know the word bycatch, but by the time you're done with this interview, you will. So there.
Well, Matthew Dolan has thoroughly researched this product. He's very, very easy to talk to about it, too. Matthew Dolan, your book, Simply Fish, has some really exciting recipes in it, some good notes of instructions and information for the readers, and some support and hints for sustainability, which is a big issue in what's coming out of our oceans and other waterways as well. Tell me what you set out to do here. You've organized it by seasons, right?
That's correct.
And you do have a whole thing on sustainability and how to go about it, right?
That's right, yeah.
I like the way you set up, like, what to ask your fishmonger.
That's right, and that's really, you know, that's really the piece in each recipe, and I think that's also what I set out to do, was to create a guide, bringing more fish into the home kitchen. I think a lot of people are very hesitant or reluctant to cook fish because they don't know how to. It's easy to overcook. It's expensive. It's smelly, you know. So,
oh, yeah. I mean, this friend of mine, her husband adores fish. And anytime he's out, he orders it. I mean, he goes out for lunch so he can have it. She won't allow it to be cooked in the house.
I think there's a lot of that.
Oh,
so I think when people go to when they go to the grocery store or they go to the fish counter, they don't know what to say. And so the idea, one of the sort of the threads throughout the book was to give people the tools as to how to navigate that experience with the fishmonger so that they'll get, just to make it easier, really, and to make it more approachable.
You have so many tips throughout the book. Also you have like substitutions if people want your recipe but they don't have access to that particular fish. You have this glossary of terms, which actually I never thought I needed to know all these things. I mean, and they're really kind of all over the, I mean, like, what about burned or burnt?
Right. No, I think more, you know, just because that gives the book one more piece. Uh-huh. When you found the recipes you like, and then let's say the notion of sustainability actually matters to you, and you're reading up more on the topic, you know, the book can also serve as a reference material for if you need to kind of source those fish-related terms.
And, you know, the one thing I think is misleading about it is the title, as it applies to your recipes, Simply Fish. And what was it, your motto? Simply Fish. Fish.
75
simple,
modern, yeah.
Whatever. Because, I mean, even your lobster recipes are not straightforward, you know, poaching your lobster.
Well, I think I tried to give as much detail in the method so that the person who's using the recipe wouldn't be left in the dark, really. So you're right. There, it's not boil water, throw in lobster, pull it out, you know, crack it open and eat it. The explanations are a little bit more detailed. So I think I understand your point, though.
You poach Maine lobster. Comes with Brussels sprouts, baby carrots, and mint salsa verde. I've never even heard of all that with lobster. We just get a big pot and put it in, you know.
Right, and it melts some butter, and you're done.
Yeah.
I think that's the other thing, is that I think once you read the recipe and then you read the method, it might seem like a lot, but then when you really look at it, you know, like take that recipe, for example, the mint salsa verde, that's just the ingredients thrown into a blender, and then you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see it would be misleading, but once you make it through, I think it's not as challenging as it seems.
Right. The other thing is, let's turn that whole thing, that coin over, and on the other side, these are very interesting recipes. I mean,
okay.
I make mussels forever and ever and ever. I always make mussels. And you have beer poached mussels with orzo pasta, olives, prosciutto, and tarragon. Now, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Thank you. That's one of my favorite recipes in the book.
Now, you're sure you didn't leave an ingredient out there?
What's the name of that place what's the name of the...
Give me
Yountville, they had a little restaurant where we had mussels with...
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
what's his
yes.
name? French name, French guy.
Yeah,
was it Bistro Chantilly?
That's
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yes.
They made mussels with
thyme
and red wine, and I thought it was fabulous.
We brought the concept back and gave it to a local restaurateur, chef of ours, who made it for us and lots of other people after that.
All right.
So now, give us some idea, like, easy is it to get sand dabs?
Well, sand dabs, They're pretty easy. And you know, it's funny because some of the well, in San Francisco when they're around, because they're sporadically available. Mm-hmm. They're inexpensive and they're delicious. On the East Coast, I don't think we see them as much. But along the West Coast, they're pretty approachable. And that's another example of one of those recipes where you can substitute lemon sole or something else like that.
Oh, yeah, so, didn't say that, didn't I? Was wondering, because I like this recipe. It's with clementine, pistachio, asparagus, and extra virgin olive oil. It sounds heavenly.
Yeah, that's just simple. And that's a little bit of the California influence, you know. It's very ingredient driven, where it can be. And again, going back to the idea of having a simple dish where you have just these ingredients, mm-hmm. and all good quality ingredients, and just cooking the fish properly, and you don't really need anything else.
Soft shell crab BLT looks wonderful too.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that's just a lot of fun.
Well, you seem to have a lot of fun with recipes, because, I mean, here, I couldn't believe I was reading this, chilled mussel tea sandwiches. I loved it.
But here's the thing. You put, again, poaching the mussels, and you get to get them. You don't see that everywhere, and that's not, I don't know. I wanted to stay away from predictable, and I wanted the recipes to be, you know, to be, not only to have a great variety, but yes, to be fun and to fun to eat and to talk about.
Yes, you include desserts in your book, but you clarify that these desserts do not have fish in them.
They don't. That's true. They don't have fish. I did that because when we keep with seasonality, if someone, let's say it's the middle of fall, and you know, maybe you don't want to have to go and run and look up a recipe for a different dessert.
Uh-huh.
To help you complete the whole meal.
Right. Now, you actually go into how to plate each dish.
I do. I think that's also, you know, it's, again, it's more of a suggestion, but I definitely, the idea of the plating of each dish was to, once people have, let's say, for example, they've made the sauce and then they've roasted off the vegetables or potatoes or whatever it is, and then they're cooking the fish. The idea of that is to give them sort of an advantage, you know, kind of a, now instead of the home cook mentality, I'm bringing you into the restaurant mentality a little bit, where something I teach my line cooks when they start is how we put the plate on the table first. And I know that sounds silly, but sometimes people need this kind of level of direction. And, you know, you put the plate down, you put the vegetables on top, you put the sauce around, and do all that while the fish is still in the pan. So when you take the fish out of the pan, it's cooked perfectly, it's hot, and you can serve it right away. So the idea was just to give people guidance whether they needed it or not.
Uh-huh. I mean, I wrote a cookbook, and as I understand, you assume people know something until you actually go over it with somebody who doesn't know, and then you realize how complicated everything has to get.
Right.
Tell us about your fish tails that you use to preface each season.
Well, I mean, I've lived in a number of places. I, you know, I was single throughout my 20s, and I had two bags and a knife kit. And I was, you know, I was in New York City. I was in New Orleans. I moved up to the Napa Valley for a moment. I did some staging in Europe, and then I ended up opening a restaurant with a team in Helsinki, Finland.
Oh, you sounded like you had fun in Finland.
No, I did have fun, but Finland's crazy. That's the thing. The Finns are crazy. And yeah. I'm happy to say that to any Finnish person's face, because they know it.
Yeah.
But they, everywhere I went, a pretty interesting food culture. And so in New Orleans, you know, you have the Texas redfish, and you have the Gulf prawns and crawfish, and even though that's not really... Anyway, and then, you know, and you come to Northern California, and you have just an amazing menu of the entire Pacific, obviously, but just the variety is so amazing. And then, you know, in New York, you have a whole different set of options, so and different influences, too. So, I mean, Finland's a great example of, you know, just the amount of, like, these white fishes that are so powerful, and they usually smoke them, and then the whole cuisine, or the whole system of eating caviar, and how how many different fishes are producing a caviar, and they eat them all.
Uh-huh.
So you get to kind of experience from you know, just basically from a different perspective. As any young cook that's coming through my kitchen, I always tell them, you know, travel and and if you travel, make sure you stick around for a while because you'll get more out of it. So yeah, so each one of the fishtails kind of is a related experience from different places I've lived. And I mean, I'll tell you that the other thing about Finns is that they love their drinking.
Oh yes, yes, you noted that.
They love their saunas. So you know, when it's 22 degrees Fahrenheit outside and you look out in the snow and you see these naked, drunken Finns rolling around because they just finished the sauna, you're like, oh, I'm certainly not in the States anymore. So, well, but I thought it was also just fun to tell a couple of quick stories and make it, you know, to kind of hopefully personalize personalize the book.
Well, it is. I mean, your personality comes through, that's for sure. And go ahead, Robert.
Well, now, it's interesting. In this house, Anne is the chef. I just cook. It seems like I'm cooking more and more, but nevertheless, I just cook. But one area where Anne has always said, you know what, you have a fine touch for that. It's in the cooking of fish.
Oh, yeah,
and getting it done right. And then the other thing that I think is important is to make sure that the fish can be absolutely as fresh as possible.
Absolutely.
Can you comment on both of those with the right kind of emphasis?
Yes. So, I think absolutely. I think the freshness is with any protein. The fresher the fish, the better, obviously. But fish are so highly perishable that you know you could leave a raw steak on the counter for 4 hours and it's going to be fine. I can't say the same about a piece of fish. And that's just due to different types of bacteria and sort of just the nature of the protein. But that's a key ingredient. I mean, I think it's also okay. One thing I didn't really include too much in the book, but you bring up a really good point, is you can ask when was the fish caught. I mean, there's a few instances that's there. Nowadays, there's incredible systems in place, especially for shellfish. I mean, all shellfish have to come with a tag saying when they were removed from the water. So that's easier to find out. But knowing when it was caught, that's so important. And you know, when you think about that from the freshness piece, it's also the sustainability factor because you know food waste is a very big problem in this country.
40%.
40%. I just finished a James Beard seminar on the topic. 40%.
Yep.
And it's so this if the fishmonger isn't rotating their products properly, or then they're just contributing to that problem as well. So freshness, absolutely, it's number one.
Yeah, and if you can't get it fresh, it's okay to get it frozen because that's frequently fresher. If it's immediately frozen.
Would be surprised. You would be surprised at how much fish on the market is frozen at sea.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that. Yeah.
And I used to think, maybe it was me as a young guy fresh out of culinary school, I used to think that there was something very wrong with that. And then I actually met a Japanese chef who was explaining to me that they prefer it. And exactly for that reason, that they can keep it longer and that for slicing sushi, the times they'll begin when it's partially frozen just to get a cleaner line. So I think I really kind of got my mind around it about 2 years before I wrote the book. A friend of mine is a commercial fisherman, and he said he caught these 25-pound wild salmon. I want one, and I said, of course I want one. That sounds incredible. And it showed up frozen solid. It was a brick. And so I had to leave it in the refrigerator for about 2 days for it to properly defrost. And when I did, you would have known the difference. It was beautiful. It was delicious and fresh as can be. So, yeah, there's that element of freezing that kind of has a bad rap, but it's not such a bad thing after all.
You know, you have a whole section also, since you brought up about this 25-pound salmon, about larger gatherings and whole fish. And I thought it was interesting that you have that little chart there about what fish it is, how much it weighs, how many people it serves, and how long it takes to cook.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, and what I love about the whole fish thing, I do it at all the restaurants, actually, here in San Francisco, where you can come in and order a whole fish. So we'll buy four or five fish, ranging between 3 and 20 pounds every day, and we get stuff that's that's really as fresh as it can be.
Yes.
And what we do basically is we just coat it really easy to prepare, and you pop it in the oven. And if you're even, you could be 5 minutes in either. So from that table, you could really be 5 minutes in either direction, and you're still not going to overcook it. I mean, with that, it's such a beautiful way to prepare fish. There's the whole roast, and it's actually my favorite way to do it. And then what you do with it afterwards is, it's up to you. I mean, one of our restaurants is a bit more casual, so we serve the whole fish with a stack of tortillas, some guacamole, some salsa, and people make their own fish tacos.
That's
at the
cute.
Table, and it becomes a community thing. At the other restaurant, it's usually like seasonal vegetables and then some medley, and then the sauce varies, so it's more of a fine dining approach. Mm-hmm. So there's so much you can do, and really, I challenge anybody to find a moister and more delicious end result.
Now, Robert, remember in Lima, we got the, what is it, paiche?
Okay.
It was the biggest.
Oh, yes, yeah. The
whole fish. It was the biggest fish I'd seen.
The Amazon fish.
Okay.
But that was also the place where they had another great big fish, Gaston Acurio's seafood restaurant. We had how many courses, and then as the last course, he produced the fish that would feed about 15 or 20 people. and there were at least five of us.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, well, this is useful and all. I have one more question. I didn't understand about stuffing fish with parchment.
Yeah, I know, it's a strange one. But the reason that you do it, well, there's the main reason to do it is to open up the belly and actually to make it less oblong in its shape, so that if the belly's split open and you fill the cavity with parchment paper, you can actually use that to rest the fish standing upright. Because if the fish is standing upright in the oven, it's going to cook evenly. If it's laying on one side, then it's not going to cook evenly.
Yeah.
So the parchment allows it to stand up.
Yeah, you have a picture of a fish that's standing up on the table that's set in that section. What is
mm-hmm.
that fish?
That's a red snapper.
Okay, well, it looks great. Well, listen, I think it's a really great book. And I think
thank you very much.
Very useful. And congratulations also to your food stylist and photographer.
Yeah, I'll definitely pass that along.
Okay, great. Well, Matthew Dolan, glad to meet you. Good luck on your beer dinner. I want to repeat it. It's the 13th, right?
That's right.
And too bad you won't come to Star Chefs. We always have a good time there.
I can imagine. But well, maybe next year.
Okay. Thanks, Matt.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Bye.
Take care.
Okay. So, listeners, imagine what we're going to talk about next week. You better be sure to join us to find out why. Same time, same place. And until then,
bye-bye.